Hi, I'm Corey Rabin. Welcome to Crosstalk, where we do our part to inspire recovery from addiction and discover a better way. Whether you're considering a life free from substance dependency or already on that path, Crosstalk is here for you. Each episode, we do a deep dive into the experiences and stories of people who have walked the walk of recovery alongside experts in the field to enhance our understanding of addiction and recovery. Our mission is simple: to help you navigate the challenges and celebrate the victories of your personal journey to a better life. So buckle up and let's hit the road as we embark on this transformative journey together. This is Crosstalk Podcasts, and welcome to my buddy, Big John, who is here in our studio. And even though there are lights all over here, it is much brighter when you are in the room.
Oh, please.
Our listeners on Crosstalk Podcasts are able to hear from you, because the message that you're going to share with us is going to be inspiring. So where'd you grow up? Tell us a little bit about the early years.
Okay. First of all, thank you for having me. It's an honor. Anytime that I can talk about recovery and AA and God, I get pretty excited myself. And it's great getting to know you better. You know, you truly are inspiring. You know, I was a little nervous.
Really?
When you first asked me, you know, put me in a room with 100 people at an AA meeting, you know, I just go. So I was born and brought up in Norwalk, Connecticut, born in 1960. So, you know, Connecticut in the 60s and 70s, and mom and dad and a younger sister. And at a young age, I realized that alcohol had some kind of impact on my family. And I came to find out that both my grandfathers drank and just stopped. And it was obviously an issue. One grandfather went totally to religion, Billy Graham and all that, but he stopped drinking. And I love them both, my grandparents. Everybody immigrated from a small island in the Baltic Sea and between Sweden and Finland. And from the 20s to the 30s to the 50s. And alcohol was around when I was growing up.
How old were you when they stopped?
You know what? My grandfather's probably stopped, I would imagine, in the mid-60s, because I never remember any bad situations.
You're like 5 years older.
Yeah, yeah. And so I have a younger sister, Lisa. And my parents got divorced when I was 15 and my sister was like 12.
Was there a lot of fighting?
No, but, you know, I love my dad, but he was stricken with it as well. And things were really good. And he was, you know, for the classification of binge alcoholic. Everything was good, good, good. But when it was bad, you know, he kept all the balls up in the air, immigrated over here, couldn't speak a word of English. And, you know, the American success story. And my mom and him got divorced when I was 15, getting ready to go to high school. And it was sad. You know, a divorce is, you know, almost like a death. That's kind of how it felt. The good news for me was I was a freshman in high school, and I went to Central Catholic High School in Little Norwalk, Connecticut. And I was one of the biggest kids in the school. And, you know, so you're going to play football. I go, I never really played. And that was great. It was one of the greatest things that ever happened in my life. Truly was. It kept the governor on any drinking. But sophomore year, all of a sudden, this, you know, 14, just turned 15-year-old kid was hanging out with the juniors and seniors. They had driver's licenses. They had car. They had, you know, the access to Schaefer Tall Boys. And we'd ride down to the beach and have a Schaefer Tall Boy. And I didn't really like the taste in the beginning. You know, that's at age 15. And but I kind of liked the way it made me feel. And but football kept me in line. My coach, Dave Coyne, who I spoke to last week, and I'm looking forward to talking to him again. He was a big impact in my life. Football was a big impact in my life. Had a lot of potential. And school, high school was kind of like, you know, I was that bad movie, you would see, you know, the football player with the cheerleader girlfriend and drinking beer. And the class wasn't really that big a deal. And back then they kind of just helped you along, if you know what I mean. And, did well my last year academically and had all kinds of opportunities to go to this school and that school and the other school. And, went to a junior college, and that's really when things kind of escalated outside of football season.
You played football in college?
Yeah. I went to a junior college up in Massachusetts, and then I had the opportunity. I went to another four-year school, and I got hurt. And I called my father and said I got hurt, you know, full scholarship, all that stuff, and said I got hurt, and I want to come home. He goes, okay, I'll pick you up tomorrow morning. You go to work. Because that's what he knew. And I want to preface this. My parents did the best they could with the information they had. They really did. My dad's growing up was not like my growing up, and certainly not like my son's growing up. It was a different generation. And I have a great relationship with my dad today. I love him.
You're lucky that you have him.
Yeah.
How old is your dad?
87.
Great.
But there was some tough times. There really was.
Tough times between the two of you?
Yeah. Yeah. And alcohol has kicked my family's ass for generations. When I look back on it.
Well, tell me about some of the tough times.
You know, when I came home from Temple University, I went to work, and there was still some blowback from my parents getting divorced, the tension, the baloney. But I was a workaholic, and I just followed in the footsteps of my dad, who was taught me how to work and be successful. And it turned into, you know, we work hard and play hard. So here I am. Oh, and by the way, Kathy was involved from age 20.
Oh, wow. So you met her at Temple?
No, I met her in Norwalk in our little town. And
people that don't know, Kathy's
my wife.
Right.
Who is, she's a huge part of my story. Huge. Huge. So I went to work, did well. It was kind of easy, actually. There wasn't a huge learning curve because I kind of grew up in it from age, you know, 13, 14, 15 in the summers would work. And my dad put a lot of responsibility on me. And there wasn't any pressure with responsibility as far as the binge drinking went. You know, I guess in this day and age, you would call it a binge alcoholic. Well, I didn't start with that. I'm alcoholic. My name is John.
Okay.
I missed that.
Your name again? I'm sorry.
So anyhow, you know, I bounced across the bottom at times and then would get it sorted out. And Kathy and I, yeah, so it was 1980. We get married in 87. And that was my first introduction, thanks to Kathy, that I had a problem with alcohol.
What was the first introduction?
Okay. So we're going to get married, okay, in April of 87. And it was probably maybe in the winter of 86. She says, you have a problem with alcohol. We're going to go see a counselor. I said, oh, okay. Go see this counselor. And the counselor says, okay, pack your bags. You're going to 28-day treatment at blah, blah, blah. I stood up, walked out, waited in the car for her. That was in 87. We get married. Things are bouncing pretty badly, still making money. Everything's great. Everything's fine. Workaholic, no problem. And then my son was born July 3rd of 89, John Jr. And I knew I had to stop. I knew I had to stop.
How did you know you had to stop?
Because it was so painful.
Where was the pain from? From your relationship or being a dad?
Being a dad, being not going through, not putting my son through the life that I kind of went through at age 10 to 15. And man, I don't know where this emotion is coming from, but it feels kind of good, actually. There's no zero embarrassment to it. You know, there's a cleanse that happens in AA, which is really cool. So Junior was born on July 3rd, 1989, and it was a tight spot. Knowing you have to drink, I knew I couldn't stop drinking, and I didn't know how to stop drinking.
But you knew you had to stop.
Yeah. Couldn't stop, but knew I had to stop. That's a tight spot.
Yeah.
I didn't understand disease aspect of this. No idea.
Did you know anybody who had actually done that?
No. So nobody.
You had a blindfold on.
Total. Tight spot. Knew I had to stop, but also knew I couldn't stop.
Very scary.
So I would just, I would temper it. And the binge would get further apart and more severe. And lo and behold, I didn't even know it, but Kathy was going to Al-Anon then in 89, you know, after Junior was born. And I came home one night and she says, get out and don't come back till you stop drinking. And even if you stop drinking, I don't know if you're coming back. Well, I took off again for another couple of days.
Drinking?
Yeah. Blackout. I wound up in Florida. And came back home a few days later. And I knew I couldn't go back to the house. And I went to my sister's house, you know. And
was she also in the area, Connecticut?
Yeah. Yeah, she lived a mile away. And I didn't have any blowback really from my mother and father that I can remember today.
Junior was less than a year old.
Junior, right, exactly. Junior was a year old. He was born July of 89, and this was October of 90. And so I thought back about 3 years ago, and I said there was some counselor said I needed to go to treatment, and I walked out the door. So I looked up in the Yellow Pages. There wasn't a Google then to find something. I looked up in the Yellow Pages and alcohol counselor. And I called this guy, Neil, in Westport, Connecticut. And I said, this is what's going on. He says, listen, go to 3 AA meetings and I'll see you. I says, no, you don't understand. Got this little situation going on. I got to get back in my house. I need your help. I need you to talk to my wife. He says, go to 3 AA meetings and I'll see you. And that was it. I hang up the phone and I start looking through the Yellow Pages again. I got to find someone that's got the right answer that solves this problem.
Find a different one.
No idea of the problem that I had, that I was alcoholic. So I was striking out. And I find myself looking for an AA meeting. Now, mind you, when he said go to an AA meeting, I didn't know what an AA meeting was.
Maybe a car company or something.
Yeah, exactly. AA, triple. I didn't know what it was. Corey, I swear to God, I didn't know what an AA meeting was. So I look up and there's meetings in my hometown. And I'm like, God, who's going to be there? So I go to a meeting in the next town over in Westport, Connecticut, Saugatuck Congregational Church, October 2nd, 1990. And I walked into that room, and I remember every color in the room. I remember where I sat. I remember the steps on that side of the wall and the traditions on that side of the wall. And I looked, and I said, admitted we were powerless over alcohol and our lives became unmanageable. Well, you know, after I had the first one, I'm powerless, but I can go several weeks without it. And unmanageable? Oh, you know, only when I drink.
It's a little overstatement.
Yeah. And then that came to believe a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. I was like, oh, okay. And then I saw step three, made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood him. I didn't need to read as we understood him. Little did I know I really did need to gain a better understanding. But when I saw God, I was like, I had this sense of peace and calmness that I know today passes my human understanding. Passes my human understanding. Because it has nothing to do with my human understanding. It has to do with the teachings and the feeling I get if I help someone else. Little did I know, selfish, self-centered, self-seeking with 1,000 forms of fear, sitting there, 30 years old, badass, oh, had a nice house, had the cars in the garage.
Pretty wife, football player.
Yeah.
World by the...
Yeah. Bingo. But I was up against it.
So when you saw the steps for the first time, it kind of, was it an aha moment?
Yeah. Yep. And I thought it was a religious program, which I was good with. I was fine with it. I didn't care what it was. Because I read that first step. Yeah, I'm powerless over alcohol. And all these people sitting in this room must be powerless over alcohol. And they're all happy and clapping and everybody's friends. And I sat there, had a baseball hat on, and like the square tiles on this floor, I knew how many square tiles were in that room because I would count like that way. That's what I did during the meeting. So fast forward, I go to those three AA meetings. I call this guy, Neil, who's still my friend today. And I said, all right, I went to those meetings. Now, I want to go see him so that I can get back in the house. Now, mind you, I'm still staying at my sister's house. And she was looking at me like, oh, what's the matter with you? I was like, oh, tight spot. So I go see him. And he says, you got yourself painted in a corner and you're effed. I look at this guy and I go, this must be the wrong guy. What kind of doctor is this? And fast forward, you know, 2-3 months into it, you know, he convinced me that it was life or death. And my only shot was AA, get a sponsor, do 90 meetings in 90 days, and I'll continue to see you. And he says, if you drink again, you'll go to 28-day rehab directly, or I will not see you. Well, I said, I'm not going away. So I got to do this. So it was like football practice started again. And 1 day, 2 day, 3 day, 5 day. And I remember sitting there, we used to have to count, we count the days and we'd have to say 12 days, 13 days. And for some day, for some reason, 14 days sticks out in my head. I don't know, it was pivotal in some shape or form in my brain. And I can't remember how long it took to let, for Kathy to let me in back in the house. It was quite a while ago, but it wasn't all that long. And she kept going to Al-Anon, and I went to Saugatuck Congregational Church every night from 7 to 8 o'clock. Then I went to Sunday morning men's meeting, Saturday and Sunday mornings. And that was for many, many years. And, you know, the first AA meeting I went to, I remember walking down the stairs, and this guy, Jack, was standing outside. And he says, hey, your first night here. I go, yeah. He goes, I'll see you tomorrow night. And I said, yeah, okay, I'll see you tomorrow night. You know, and I'm driving back to my sister's house. And like, I told that guy I'd see him tomorrow night. Shit, I guess I gotta go. Because if I was just me, I was, you know.
Didn't matter.
I would do it. Like, I didn't miss work. You know, the only time I had a problem is when I started drinking. You know, one was too many, 1,000 wasn't enough. All the stories, you know, and knock on wood, I haven't had a drink since that night. Walked into that first AA meeting. And I don't say that to brag or boast. And I'll share that at meetings. Listen, if you're sitting here this morning or tonight at a meeting, you don't have to drink anymore. It's over. AA will ruin your drinking because you'll think about us and you'll say, oh man, that guy, Big John, he said, I don't have to drink anymore, but I'm going to drink, you know?
So how forward-thinking was Kathy to get educated at Al-Anon?
I think she was so sick and tired. Really was.
Not many people, no. Husbands or wives, don't know to do that.
She gets the credit. She gets the credit.
Well, you get the credit, but she certainly is the way it all started.
Yeah, and it was out of self-preservation and desperation, and a one-year-old kid, and I was full-blown alcoholic, binge alcoholic. Didn't drink every day, but when I drank, it was over. But October 2nd, 1990 was a pivotal day. And it took quite a while, you know. Everybody was kind of watching. You know, what's he going to do? What's going to happen here? So this is the exciting part of what I like to talk about. The people that I met, the men that I met, the meetings that I went to and still go to, you know, they're all passed away now. Kevin Murphy, he was the guy that, you know, he goes, oh, here's the big shot, you know, and really give me a hard time. And John Kern really kind of loved me back to health, you know, and I gave him a set meeting schedule. And that was it. And I had to call Kevin every day at 5 o'clock. And if I didn't call him at 5 o'clock, because he had a phone attached to a wall attached to a wire. And if I called him at 10 after, he'd reference the book. And he'd say, you just think you're an exception to all the rules, don't you? He says, you need to be in submission to this or not. What are you going to do? What's your choice to be? That's what it says. God is everything or he is nothing. What's your choice to be? Oh, I'm not into this God thing. Huh? I don't like your odds. Find your own God, spirit of the universe. I don't know what it is, because it certainly isn't you. And it certainly isn't me. It's that simple. The rebellious one. Kevin used to say, either you're going to be in submission to this or you're going to be in submission to something else and go back to your same bullshit. And he was right.
And when you say submission to this, for listeners who aren't familiar with what that means, could you expand on that a little bit?
Basically, for me, is to seek a relationship with a power greater than myself that I choose to call God. And continuously look for God's will. A lot of these new guys like, well, I don't know what God's will. You talk about God's will versus my will. Well, how are your decisions working out for you? How did your decisions work out for you prior to AA? And it's all laid out in the literature. Talk about a divine intervention. It's all in the books. It's all in the literature. It's all in the 12 and 12.
What's the best advice anybody ever gave you?
Don't drink and go to meetings. John Kern, every phone call, he would say, listen, kid, don't drink and go to meetings. My first sponsee got so crazy at me because, like, I thought I was in way over my head. And John Kern says, you're fine. You can have, it's time for you to find a pigeon. I find a pigeon. And, you know, he yelled at me one night and he says, you know, that's all you say to me is don't drink and go to meetings. Don't drink and go to meetings. And I go, oh, okay, I got to go. And I hang up the phone. I call John Kern and I say, John, you know, and this other guy's name was John too, who's still sober today. A good friend of mine. And I says, you know, so-and-so just ran up one side of me about this. Don't drink and go to meetings. I said, that's basically what you've been telling me for a year and a half. He goes, well, let me ask you something. Is this interaction you just had with this guy something you're going to drink over? I said, no. He goes, okay, I'll see you tomorrow, and hangs up the phone. It was that simple. Talk about simple. I needed simple. You know, and there has been a change in AA, you know, and not, you know, listen, when I walked into that AA meeting, most people just walked into AA meetings then. Detox, I mean, I'm fortunate, you know, I was young enough where I didn't need detox. I bounced back in 12 hours. You know, detox, people that came from detox and treatment centers was very limited, unlike it is today. We used to do 12-step calls. Someone would call and say, this person's drunk over here. And we'd get a couple, three guys, and we'd go and try to wrangle them and drag them to a meeting. You know, now it's, you know, you got a credit card, you got insurance. And I'm not knocking it. Not knocking it at all. It's great. No, it just wasn't my journey.
Right.
And just wasn't my journey.
And there's some people don't have that opportunity.
Yeah.
And thank God that there are other alternatives.
Yep.
You know, there's a question that I sometimes ask guests, but I know the answer to the question when I ask it to you. The question is, if there was somebody else's shoes you could walk in, who would it be and why?
Who I would like to walk in their footsteps, right? You know, I have Jimmy R today in my life, who kind of picked up right where John Delaney left off. You know, I don't know anybody more disciplined, more crazy, you know, and that's why I love him. You know, we moved to Florida and, you know, it took us a year to figure out if it was the right thing to do. And, you know, I went to Crossroads and Jimmy and I hit off an amazing friendship. And it's kind of, it seems unconventional in AA, right? But when John Delaney's wife passed away in 08, he was sponsorless. You know, John Delaney passed away, he was 84. And when he passed away, he promised his wife, Jane, that he would get a sponsor, right? So he's my sponsor. John Delaney's my sponsor. Like, I walked in his footsteps as best I could. Next to impossible, actually, but I tried. And he never had a cell phone, had his phone on the wall, and he lived 2 miles away from me, and he would write me hand notes. He would write me notes and put them in the mail and mail them to me. And one night, Kathy goes, oh, you got another note from John D. And I'm like, oh, man, you know, like I saw him 4 hours ago, but I love opening his you know, and getting his words of wisdom. So I open it up, and it says, John, would you be my sponsor? Love, John D. And I'm reading this thing, and I'm going, how could I be his sponsor? He's my sponsor. Right? And so then I gave him a ride to the meetings every morning for the last couple of years of his life, and it was one of the greatest things that was part of my life. And he gets in the truck, and I go, I got your note last night. He goes, yeah. I says, I don't know what to say. He says, how about yes? And I looked at him, and I said, I don't know that I feel qualified, but yes. And that was probably in 2010 or 11.
A couple of years before he passed.
Yeah. And then I come down here with Jimmy R., and as Jimmy, John D passed away, and I need a sponsor, and boom, boom, boom. And then all of a sudden, JoJo, Jimmy's sponsor, passed away like 3 or 4 years ago, who Neil knows, who Neil knew when he moved to Atlanta very well. And Jimmy calls him and he says, well, Johnny, now you got to be my sponsor. So I look at this and, you know, we might be like called out on it. Like, how do you guys sponsor each other? I said, well, I don't know. John D started it. You can talk to him about it. You know,
when you get there.
Right. And this thing's never been a program, Corey. This thing has always been the fellowship.
Well, our listeners have been blessed being able to hear what you have to say, and just the calm and peace that, you know, just emanates from you, and the comfort that you get from the program, from the people in the program, and from just living a great way of life. It's really an honor to have you here.
Oh, please. It's my honor to be asked.
Well, thank you so much. And we have this way that we close.
Oh, boy.
So I'm going to tell people, I'm going to look at that camera, and I'm going to tell people to like and subscribe and comment, smack the bell, tell us what we're doing right, tell us what you want to hear more of, and thanks for watching, and thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time on Crosstalk Podcasts.